Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Back in on the drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we'll give you a chance to be registered to win an Alex Gordon autographed bat. You'll also be registered to win $250 to the Royals team store. You'll also hear from Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. He will join us coming up in about 30 minutes. Speaking of MVP quarterbacks, Brett Favre today was on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. We tried to find the audio for about 2 hours on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. I'm here to tell you that we were unsuccessful in that quest. But I do have the quote for you, Sean Levine. He said this about Le'Veon Bell. Quote, "Well, the Chiefs don't need him. I don't know Le'Veon personally. I don't know what kind of guy he is, but I do know the kind of player that he's been. He's an incredible player, but I don't think the Chiefs need him. And I love Andy Reid. I think the world of Patrick Mahomes. I think their football team is not, they're beatable, obviously. They're pretty doggone good right now. They've got a good thing going, and sometimes adding a player of Le'Veon's caliber does more harm than good. I don't think the Chiefs need Le'Veon Bell." This is maybe the part to me that's the most surprising about this from a lot of people. Is anybody arguing whether the Chiefs need Le'Veon Bell or not? Like last week when I was saying, go get Le'Veon Bell, go get Le'Veon Bell, I was not here pounding the table saying this is a need. This team can't win without Le'Veon Bell. But to me, it's about being a percentage better. I think the Chiefs are a better team with Le'Veon Bell than they were without Bell. And I thought Therese made a really good point about how he sort of complements the weaknesses between Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I like Helaire, but let's call it what it is. He hasn't been a good goal-to-go distance type runner. He's not a guy that you really trust to pound the ball from a first and goal from the 5 yard line. I think you can score a touchdown. There's also some questions about pass blocking where I don't think anybody is looking at it as Le'Veon Bell as being a need for this team. You're a top 10 offense without him, but I think it's about filling in some of the gaps with Clyde Edwards-Helaire and being a good fit for the offense. And I think Bell is that.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's, I know that's what he said, but I don't know if that's exactly what he meant in the case that the Chiefs, I didn't hear one person in the media, locally, nationally, say the Chiefs need Le'Veon Bell. I mean, that'd be moronic. They won the Super Bowl with Damian Williams. They drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire. We all know he's going to be a backup. So, of course, they didn't need him. But does he make it easier for the offense? Is he a nice insurance policy? Is there usage for him on the goal line, short yardage, in the playoffs, pass blocking? Yeah, so I'm with you. I think that he definitely serves a role here. I think that basically what Brett Favre was trying to say is you can upset the apple cart. Like for a team that's got probably the best chemistry and locker room in the entire NFL, you know, all of our dads told us at some point, don't fix it if it ain't broke. I'm not worried about it because Le'Veon Bell is not the locker room cancer that he's made out to be. I literally spent 2 hours last night doing research I was on the dark web trying to find out as much as I could about Le'Veon Bell. I couldn't get anything except for the time that he held out a year after he carried the ball 340 something times and he wanted to get paid because his body was really wearing down on him. So again, like I don't know if he's the bad guy that he's been made out to be.
But to me,
in fact, I know he's not.
But to me, even upsetting this apple cart, what are we talking about? Clyde Edwards-Helaire was drafted in the first round to a team who had a guy who we thought could have won Super Bowl MVP. He came into the situation knowing that you were going to have to split some time here. I think Andy clearly likes Clyde. The organization clearly likes him. The team likes him. He's touched the ball in the top five in the NFL. It's not like that's now going to greatly diminish with Le'Veon Bell. And there's other touches around out there. Think about it. They ran the ball 46 times. 25 of those touches are Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mahomes had 10 carries in the game. Darrell Williams got carries. Darwin Thompson got a couple of carries in this game. There's more than enough food in this buffet for everybody to eat. So I don't really know if it's as much about splitting the apple cart here where I'm sort of looking at it with Le'Veon as my expectations. Can you be better than Damian Williams? And I'm not talking about week five Damian Williams. I'm saying is last year in the postseason, the kind of runner that I thought he is, the kind of explosion that he has, and how how consistent he was. Can Bell come in and be that kind of player for this team and be a good complement to what you have with Hilaire? That's all I'm really holding him to. I want to play this for you with Therese. He says that Bell sort of fills in some of the gaps for this team.
Three specific ways, right? The red zone. Bell is a bigger back. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is 5'9", 5'8", 210 pounds. You know, Bell's a big dude, like 6'2", 225. So the Chiefs don't really beat you up at the line of scrimmage that regularly anyway. And it's hard to run the football when your line isn't, like, super dominant at the point of attack in the red zone. So it helps having the bigger back with the vision that Bell still has. He's going to help them in the red zone. He'll also help them in the passing game, even though we know Edwards-Helaire is good there. They haven't really unleashed that fully yet. I'm sure they will eventually. But, no, I think, you know, that's one particular way. Bell's tremendous on screens, and they're going to use him in that way. And also running routes. And the last thing, and this is the most important thing, guys, pass protection. Edwards-Helaire wasn't great at that last year. They didn't ask him to do it very much at LSU, quite frankly. And I think he wants to do it, and he knows how important it is. But, you know, I think he missed I think he was hurt a little bit by missing some of those OTA reps. So Bell is a big guy again who's played a lot of football, seen a lot of football, is a reliable pass protector. You know, he'll be very helpful in got-to-pass situations where he can scan, like, the defense and pick up blitzers or then leak out or serve as a pure weapon.
I'm looking at Clyde Edwards-Helaire and sort of how he's been used so far this season and the amount of touches that he has and how involved he's been in the offense. I don't know if the plan was to ever use him as much as he's been used. So think about this. And I know Derrick Henry's played one fewer game because they've had a bye. There's only two players in the NFL who have more carries this year than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's Joe Mixon and Derrick Henry. I don't think Clyde's a guy that you're going to give the ball to running the football 275 times or 300 times. I think the plan was always to have a good 1A, a good 1B situation and sort of limit some of the touches due to Clyde's size. I think that's what Le'Veon provides you here. So I do expect some of the touches to come down. So I think you can make a case that they're somewhat overusing him so far this year. Again, there's only two players in the NFL who have more carries this year than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's Joe Mixon and Derrick Henry. I don't think that was ever the plan for his usage.
Also, just because he's out there play the same position doesn't mean that they've got the same skill set. Like, just because we're calling him running backs and the Chiefs have a running back doesn't mean they could use a running back that does different things. That's like looking at Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins and saying, well, they're both wide receivers. Yeah, they do it completely different. One's, what, 5'8", one's 6'2", one's a speedster, one's a possession guy. Like, they're completely different. So in the case of Edwards-Helaire, I feel like he's a guy that can obviously, we've seen him hit the holes, he can break off the long run, but is he good on the goal line situations? Is he good on third and short? Is he good when you know it's going to be a pass blocking down? Not necessarily. You know who's really good at those things? Le'Veon Bell. So it's not like you got two guys with the same skill set. You got two running backs that do completely different things.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. So the projection from ESPN.com. So they extrapolate where you are and they play the on pace game. He is on pace to carry the ball 285 times. He is also on pace to have 56 catches for this team. That's just an incredibly high usage for a running back in 2020. I don't think that was ever the plan here. I think they brought in Bell to shoulder some of that load from Helaire and sort of keep him fresh toward the second half of the season. I said this the entire time last week. To me, this is a free roll with Le'Veon Bell. And I actually think it's by far away the most interesting storyline heading into this game. I know that Bell's role is going to expand over the course of the season, but the Chiefs are a 13.5-point favorite in this game. I'm not really as worried about if they're going to win. I feel pretty confident they're going to win this game. I'm curious if we're going to see Willie Gay get on the field more than his two snaps last week. Are they going to throw the ball to Mecole Hardman more than the one target he got in this game? How many times is Bell involved in the offense? Those are the things I'm much more worried about going into this game against the Broncos.
And I was never the biggest fan of Damian Williams, but I certainly understand the role that he played. Hell, he was a starting running back for a team that went on to win the Super Bowl, and I'll say it again. He probably should have been the MVP of that game. So I get it. He served a role and at times he was good. But the Chiefs plan, like, remember, chronological order was the Chiefs had the draft. They get Edwards-Helaire late in the first round and then COVID happens. Well, I guess COVID happens, the draft happens. And then after that is when Damian Williams opted out. So he was part of the plan. Like, I think the plan was we'll draft the running back. We'll make Edwards-Helaire a feature running back, but we'll still have Damian to spell him. Well, then all of a sudden you didn't have that guy and it was Darwin or it was Darrell Williams or it was DeAndre. It was some of these other options that weren't great, and the Chiefs went out there, looked on the open market, and went, wait, Le'Veon Bell's available. He wants to come here. We want him. And he'll play for pennies on the dollar plus incentives. And he's willing to be a backup. Like, the more I think about it, maybe it's just because now it's actually came to fruition and not just a conversation we're talking about. It really is the ultimate low-risk, high-reward type move.
I want to play for you what Patrick Mahomes had to say on this show yesterday about adding Le'Veon Bell into the mix.
I think it's going to help out a ton. I mean, obviously, Clyde has been playing his tail off and doing a great job, Darryl, as well. But adding a guy that's that versatile, that's really had a lot of success in this league and that is hungry to come out there and prove the haters wrong, as they say, I'm excited for him to have that opportunity and be able to be another great weapon in this offense.
You watch a lot of film. What do you say to people that think Le'Veon is done?
I mean, they aren't watching the All-22. They're not watching the film, because if you watch him, obviously with the Steelers, but even with the Jets, I mean, he was still out there making plays happen. And you look at that, they're getting those loaded boxes, and he's getting guarded by some of the best defenders on the team, because that's how much of a weapon that he is. And he's still making plays happen. And obviously coming here, I mean, he's going to have better one-on-one matchups, and he's going to be a hard guy for defenses to stop.
One thing that Le'Veon Bell will never see in this offense is a loaded box, and he will never be defended by the other team's best defender. There's just too many other good players on this team for him to ever be in that situation. Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll give you a chance to be registered for an Alex Gordon autographed bat. We'll also give you a chance to win $250 to the Royals team store. All you need to do is keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up next, Patrick Mahomes has certainly had a very interesting career in Denver. We'll talk about it next. Stick around. It's a drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. We'll also give you a chance to be registered for an Alex Gordon autographed bat and $250 to the Royals team store. Rob got one for his, he got a his and hers Patrick Mahomes Royals jersey for he and his imaginary girlfriend. And we said that, and Manti Te'o just signed on the practice squad for the Chicago Bears. See, miracles do happen every single day. Rich Gannon will be on the show coming up in just a little bit. So Patrick Mahomes met with the media earlier today, and he has had quite the experiences in Denver, Colorado.
Up and down experiences in Denver. I mean, I've had the win my first game ever starting, that week 17 game, week 16, whatever it was. Then I had the Monday Night Football game where we got the comeback victory, and then I had that game where I got hurt. But if you've looked at it, I mean, it's a great atmosphere to play, and I like going there. I mean, obviously not the fans this year, but they're usually a great fan base. They love their football, and so I'm excited for it, and it's going to be a snow game, and I'm pretty excited for that as well.
I had sort of forgot about that, and I wish we had talked to Mahomes about it a little bit more, just going to Denver and what it means. Like, he has had a wide range of emotions in Denver, Colorado. You know, you find out you're going to make your first ever career NFL start. That has to be an exciting time. I'm sure his parents were at the game. You then play well in the game. You win. You come back home and you know, hey, the next year it's going to be my job. I'm ready to light the world and the NFL on fire. The next time you go to Denver, in my opinion, that's still my favorite Patrick Mahomes play. He has made a lot of great plays between then, but the play he made against the Denver Broncos and the left-handed throw on Monday Night Football, to me, is still my favorite play from him.
Broncos show blitz, a sellout blitz. Mahomes trying to keep it a drive. He's looking to the left side. He throws it left-handed to Tyreek Hill, and Hill makes the catch, and he's out of bounds at the 49-yard line of Denver. A first down, third and five. Batman's left-handed.
To quote Major League 2, it takes big huevos to make that kind of play. There's only maybe one other player in the NFL that makes that play, and it's Aaron Rodgers. Just, you're rolling out. You're a young player. It's fourth down in that scenario. You have to convert in order to win the football game. And you got the huevos to throw it left-handed on Monday Night Football against your division rival in a game in which one of the few games that we saw the 2018 Chiefs offense struggle. To me, that was the moment that everything clicked for Patrick Mahomes, because we see it right now in the NFL. It's one thing to play well under ideal scenarios. Josh Allen does that really well. Lamar Jackson does that really well. It's another thing when your team doesn't play really well, your back is up against the ropes, you're on the road on Monday Night Football, and you got to make a play to go out there and win. And Mahomes making that play is when I knew that he had a chance to be a really special player in the league. That's still my favorite Patrick Mahomes play.
Some dudes always talk about they'll do whatever it takes to move the chains and to keep the drive going and to get the first down. I have never seen a player that actually does that like Patrick Mahomes. I'm not just talking about that play, that same season. Remember the pass he made, a couple of them, against the Ravens, across his body to Tyreek Hill. The Super Bowl pass, remember, to Tyreek Hill. I mean, earlier this year where he had to run to get a first down, like, that dude knows exactly where the sticks are, exactly the down and distance and time in the game and the situation, and he's the ultimate. He does what it takes to win football games. Now, back to your point about the weird games he's had in Denver, the common denominator is the Chiefs have come out on top of all of them. His first game, remember, the Chiefs had everything wrapped up, so it was just kind of our first stage as Chiefs fans, and he was good, not great. He had a couple of touchdowns, and I think we all went, all right, this guy's really got a chance. Then what you're talking about, the left-handed pass was the first, I would say, real highlight. Like, don't get me wrong, the pass against San Francisco in the back of the end zone to, who was it, Chris Conley? Mm-hmm. That was incredible, but that was more like an arm strength type thing. The left-handed pass is a highlight that's going to probably be on his highlight reel whenever he goes into Canton. And then you mentioned last year, it's almost a year now that he got injured in that game. So, yeah, he certainly had some weird stuff happen, but fortunately for him and for Chiefs fans, the Chiefs have won all those games.
You mentioned the injury. It was a year ago now, Patrick Mahomes, and I would say probably the scariest on-the-field moment, certainly in recent memory for the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes went down with a very scary knee injury.
Mahomes sneaks it, and somebody better guard that ankle. Mitchell Schwartz and Martinez Rankin will guard the ankle like the guards outside Buckingham Palace. It looks like it's a first down on the quarterback sneak by Patrick Mahomes. Is he off the field? He is not. He might be hurt, Kendall. They are calling to the sideline. Mahomes may be hurt.
Oh, no.
As he went on the quarterback sneak, he is down on his left hip, and he has taken his helmet off. The Chiefs run a quarterback sneak on fourth down in less than a yard, and Mahomes is injured. At 9:43 to go in the second quarter, the Chiefs leading 10-6.
And people taking a knee and Chiefs players slamming their helmet on the ground. This is clearly something very bad.
A quarterback sneak on fourth down and inches, actually fourth and a yard, or fourth and inches. He was at the bottom of the pile, and Mahomes is injured.
I want to choose my words carefully here, but I think that injury last year ended up being one of the reasons on why the Chiefs eventually won the Super Bowl. I think last year, maybe one of the biggest lessons that the Chiefs needed to learn was they had to win in spite of Patrick Mahomes. I felt like early on in the season, they were so dependent on Mahomes going out there to be special that for those next 2 weeks, you weren't going to have the Mahomes magic to sort of rely on. The defense had to step up. The other guys on the offense had to do it. And it could just be about one. It had to be about the other 52 guys on the roster. And for last year's Chiefs team with no Patrick Mahomes at home, and you remember that run defense leaked a lot of oil early in the season, for you to beat a Vikings team that won a playoff game last year without depending on Patrick Mahomes, they were in that Packers game for the duration of the game. Now the Packers eventually won it. We saw the Packers went to the NFC Championship game, and you knew that that was going to be a difficult game to win without Mahomes. But I think the experience of knowing that you can be a good team without him and not having to depend on him, I thought really helped this defense sort of speed up the process to where they got early on in the season.
It felt like after that play, the entire air was sucked out of our entire city. Like, you could hear it in Mitch's breath. And I remember you and I were having a watch party. We were having a lot of fun. And then the place just got so quiet because it wasn't just a player or a quarterback. It was the player. It was the guy. It was the franchise. It was the future. And like you said, eventually the quarterback that went on to be the MVP of the Super Bowl. And I tend to agree with you. Like, if that doesn't happen, I guess for a little bit of a different reason, I think that it led to the Super Bowl because he came back at 100%. I think if he would have came back at 50% or 70 or 90 and he would have got behind a microphone and said, yeah, we lost this game because I can't be my, but it wasn't that. Remember, he came back and he was running around and he was sneaking and he felt comfortable and he was able to avoid the blitz. And look at the numbers. He played better after the injury than he did before. That's what I think actually propelled the team to the Super Bowl, because for a couple of games there, I think as an entire city and certainly the franchise went, all right, we kind of need this guy. Like, we can win games, but we can't win the Super Bowl without him. And then when he came back 100% and better than ever, I think that's what propelled him to the Lombardi Trophy.
I think they also sort of rallied around it as well, because if you remember, there's the video whenever Brett Veach goes up to Mahomes in that scenario and says, this is going to be a crazy story whenever we win the Super Bowl. Like, that team didn't really lack for confidence without him. Like, I thought the team really rallied around a backup quarterback and thought, we got a chance to win these next two games. They're at home. Remember, they played the Packers on Sunday Night Football, crazy environment, and then they played the Vikings on that
noon
game.
Beat the Vikings,
like,
yeah.
The team really rallied around not having Mahomes, that Denver's just been a really weird place for Kansas City. They actually haven't lost to the Broncos since they last won the Super Bowl, so they've absolutely dominated the team. But I thought it was really interesting to hear Mahomes say this earlier today. He's had three very different experiences in Denver. You make your NFL debut in Denver, you make your Monday Night Football debut also in Denver, and then you probably have like your lowest moment as a professional player so far with the injury you had against the Broncos, and just a really scary time for everybody of that 24 hours of not knowing really what the situation was and not knowing when he was going to come back to play.
That was one of those things that, you know, sometimes things happen in life that are so bad that you just completely block them out of your memory. I think a lot of Chiefs fans did that. Now, it didn't turn out to be, knock on wood, nearly as bad. And we saw what happened to Dak Prescott a couple of weeks ago. Absolutely catastrophic. But it's one of those things that, quite frankly, even when the Chiefs won the Super Bowl and we had the parade, and even earlier today before you mentioned it, I kind of forgot it happened.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll give you a chance to be registered to win an Alex Gordon autographed baseball bat and $250 to the Royals team store. All you need to do is listen for the Denny Matthews sounder during the break. When you hear Denny Matthews, be caller number four to 913-576-7610, and you'll be registered to win an Alex Gordon autographed bat and $250 to the Royals team store. And we'll also be joined by Rich Gannon of CBS Sports. Rich Gannon coming up next is The Drive.
Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. You can always interact with the show, 913-576-7610. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. But let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by our MVP, our All-Pro Rich Gannon, who also is with CBS Sports and is on the call for Bills and Jets this week. Rich, always appreciate your time. Let's start here. The Chiefs offensive line really set the tone and really dominated the Buffalo Bills up front.
They did. And, you know, I think this speaks volumes about their ability to shift gears. You know, it's one thing if you just solely rely on Patrick Mahomes in the passing game, but I think this shows their versatility. I think it shows Andy Reid's creativity in terms of the weather was an issue. They knew that the Bills had a difficult time handling the run game, and they just beat him up in the run game. I mean, I just pulled some cut-ups because we're doing the Bills this week on CBS, and so I watched some of the runs, some of the explosive ones. Edwards-Helaire had a 31-yard run, and they just gashed him. I mean, the blocking up front, the execution at the point of attack, the misdirection. You know, when you rush the ball for 245 yards on 46 carries, you know, that gets people's attention. And I think Andy's always been, you know, Andy's, look at his background as an offensive lineman in college and as a, you know, offensive line coach, come up through the ranks and eventually being an offensive coordinator. He understands the run game, understands the importance of it, understands how that helps with the play action game and everything else they want to do. But to me, what was most impressive was the way they were able to run the ball effectively throughout the course of the game against the Bills.
One thing that I think we're all wondering here in Kansas City is, what do you now do with the Buffalo Bills? They lost to the Titans. They lost to the Chiefs. They couldn't really stop the run against Kansas City. They also can't really run the football effectively. And Josh Allen, I think we've seen a little bit of a regression to the mean with him. Do you have Buffalo as being real contenders in the AFC?
I don't know if they're still a year away. I think they're a playoff caliber team. It's 4-2. They have lost two games. When you look at who they lost to the Titans, who are undefeated. They lost to the Chiefs, who are, you know, have won five games this year. So, I mean, that's two pretty good teams with two really good quarterbacks. I mean, we know about Mahomes, but the kid down there in Tennessee, Tannehill, has played really, really well since week seven a year ago. So I think that's a big part of it, the fact of competition. I would tell you that they're not playing as well defensively. You know, they made changes to their starting lineup, you know, against the Chiefs. They took you know, Murphy out of the lineup. They took Hughes out of the lineup. They put in, they moved some people around, put Addison in on the one side and Jefferson in inside. So they did a number of different things, I think, to shore up their run defense. I think, you know, getting healthy on that side of the ball, getting Milano back, I think he's getting close to being back in there. That'll help. But the quarterback, in terms of the quarterback, I would just tell you that he made some really bad throws. And when he doesn't set his feet, you know, he has improved with the accuracy, but when he doesn't set his feet, bad things happen. I always say, you know, you trust your feet, and it's complete or incomplete based on your feet. he was thrown off his back foot a bunch in that game. He failed some throws, and he also has a tendency to try and really drive throws, throw as hard as he possibly can. Not every throw has to be a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. He'll learn to throw some cuts like Patrick Mahomes. I still think this is a good football team, but I think they got their noses bloody pretty good on the other night by the Kansas City Chiefs. That was very apparent when you went back and watched the film.
Rich, depending on the opponent, we always talk about, oh, this could be a trap game or it's going to be easy to get up for this game. In the last month, they've played Baltimore, they've played Buffalo. Those are the easy type games. Is it real or is it just something us radio geeks talk about? Because the next couple of weeks, you got Denver and you got the Jets, not exactly the who's who of the AFC.
No, but, you know, you get yourself in trouble when you start looking ahead. You know, I think maybe that happened a little bit against the Raiders. You start saying, well, we've dominated the Raiders. They've never beaten us here at home. And in the last, you know, I think 12 of the last 14 times, something like that. And so, you know, it's a divisional opponent. It's going to be a physical game. There's a lot on the line for the Broncos as they try and get themselves back into this race. And no better way to do that than to knock off the Chiefs. And the quarterback's healthy again. I think to get some players back, but they're not in the same. They're not in the same caliber right now with the Chiefs in terms of their overall talent on the roster, the personnel. But they've got a really good head coach that understands defensive football. It's what got him the job in the first place, Vic Fangio. And I think they'll put together a pretty good plan versus the Chiefs this weekend.
Rich, specifically, how do you think Le'Veon Bell's going to help this football team? Because they just rushed for 220-something yards, and they got Edwards-Helaire, who's second in the NFL right now in rushing yards. How do you see Le'Veon Bell fitting into the picture?
Yeah, I felt like he had to go to the right place. You know, an organization that I think is conducive to winning. I think an organization that's got a good scheme and a good plan offensively that knows how to utilize his skills and a good offensive line and a good quarterback. I mean, you know, that's kind of what he had in Pittsburgh. Guys, I would tell you that I don't think it took him very long to realize that he wasn't in Pittsburgh anymore. I think he quickly realized that the offensive line that he had with the Jets was a lot different than the one he played behind in Pittsburgh. I mean, that's pretty apparent. I just think he was really frustrated. I don't think they used him well. I think I think the whole key with a guy like that is to get him the ball in space. You got to move him around a little bit more. They didn't do that much with him. They did a lot more in Pittsburgh than they did, obviously, with the Jets. But this is a guy that got rare skills at that position. I mean, he's one of the best and most versatile running backs in the league. I know he's frustrated, and I think he's chomping at the bit to make an impact, and I don't think there's a better situation than the Chiefs, particularly when you look at their ability to get him the ball in space. They may be one of the best screen teams in football. They're so creative with that. I think Mahomes will fall in love with him rather quickly. And not only that, but now that, you know, you look at their personnel, and Edwards-Helaire has been a really good runner. I mean, so now all of a sudden you've got another back, a fresh back that you can throw in there with him, and a guy that can really help you in situational football and third down and in different areas. So I just think it was a great move. Didn't cost him a ton of money. And I think he's a player that has got fresh legs. I mean, he didn't play 2 years ago. He missed some games last year. And I just think that he's got an opportunity, I think, to finish off his career the right way. And I think he's disappointed with what's taking place in New York.
Right now, we're talking to our MVP, our All-Pro, Rich Gannon, who joins us every Wednesday at 4:30. Let's talk about how you think teams are defending the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes has talked about it. We've heard from a lot of different people that they're sort of playing too deep safety, taking away the deep ball. What have you seen from defenses against Kansas City? And I would say with Patrick, how have you seen him adjust to how teams are defending him?
I think he's had to be more patient, which is never a bad thing. I mean, you've seen a lot of zones, you know, and you're not getting the one-on-one matchups all the time. You have to be more patient. You have to, you know, work in the middle of the field, check the ball down. You know, and I think he's done a nice job of that. When you look at the ball distribution, even last week, you know, I think there were 9 or 10 receivers that had touches in that game. So that's important. You know, I think teams are trying to take away the deep ball with Tyreek Hill. You look at what the Bills did last week. Hill had just 3 catches for 20 yards. You know, they don't. If you're in those defensive meetings, you say, we're not going to let Hill run by you. It's just not going to happen. We're not going to let him run by us and ruin the game and take over the game with some explosive plays. So they're trying to do a good job with that. You'll see some doubles there. And obviously, Kelce is a big factor, you know, in the middle of the field and running those routes down in the red zone. So he commands a lot of attention as well. So, guys like, you know, Robinson and other players have to step up and make plays, and the quarterback has to be willing to work through the progressions, which he is. He's not going to just, you know, the play is designed to throw the ball downfield the hill. It's not there. He's not going to force it. So I think, you know, I think what helps that is when you run the ball for 245 yards. Now, if you just sit there and play two deep coverage, the best way to get a team out of two deep coverage is to pound the football right at them. And I think by doing that and showing that you can do that, it forces teams to start creeping down and playing some three deep looks and bringing the safety down on the line of scrimmage. And now all of a sudden you start getting one-on-one matchups. Now all of a sudden you get the looks that you want in the passing game. So I think this is really going to benefit them, the fact that they ran the ball 46 times in some inclement weather in Buffalo. I think it's only going to serve them well moving forward.
Rich, this week we see Kansas City travel to Denver to take on the Denver Broncos. What do you think about Drew Lock and sort of where he is at this stage in his career, and what ceiling do you think Drew Lock has?
I would tell you that he's been through a lot. He's been through some coaching changes. He's, you know, it's tough when you have a rookie quarterback that in his second year has to learn a new system. And that's essentially what happened with Drew Lock. It's happened with a lot of, you know, you go to a team that's not really good and they fire the coordinator, and now all of a sudden, year two, you got to kind of start over. So I think that's what's happened a little bit. And then, of course, you know, he gets the injury, and, now he's got to sit and watch for a couple weeks. I think he's got some real skills. I mean, he's got really good mobility. He can extend plays. He's got a pretty good arm. He's a smart guy. He had some problems early in his career because of what he did in college. You guys saw a lot of them at Missouri where he was in the gun all the time. Didn't call plays in the huddle. His feet were a problem. He didn't play behind a very good offensive line. And so he had a tendency to drift and not step up into the pocket. And I think he's done a much better job of cleaning some of that up with some good coaching. He can be very streaky. He can get on a roll. He likes to work the tight end and Noah Fant. Obviously, that was a big part of that draft class. And Patrick, he seems he's got a good rapport with him. And then there's Jerry Judy's got some real speed. So they do a good job of the screen game. They do a good job trying to take the edge off the pass rush a little bit. But if they can't run the ball with Gordon and Freeman, they'll struggle. That's where he's at his best, where they have balance and they can play action him and they can boot him and get him out on the edges. But if he has to sit in there and function as a pocket passer for the majority of the time against this Chiefs defense, he'll struggle.
Hey, Rich, before you get out of here, the best game on the slate this weekend is Titans versus Steelers. Which one of those teams, at least right now, is more of an actual Super Bowl threat?
Wow, I like them both. I just did the Titans last week, and I got a chance to see that team up close, and they're really good. Their defense, not as good as the offense right now. I'd say the Pittsburgh Steelers have the better defense. So if you put, you know, you put me on the spot, I would say Pittsburgh. But, you know, Tennessee, I mean, offensively, they've got that back is rare and unique. He is 6'3", he's 250 pounds, and he can go the distance. We saw, you know, Derrick Henry go 94 yards on a run against the Houston Texans. So Tannehill's played as well as any quarterback. In fact, we put a graphic up side by side, Mahomes. Last 11 or 12 games, and Tannehill's last 11 or 12 games, he's right there in terms of touchdowns, completion percentage, efficiency, wins. I mean, he's right there. He's played really, really well. Now, Ben Roethlisberger, is rejuvenated, fresh off of that surgery. I did their game a couple weeks ago. They're playing really well. You can't take your eyes off of Chase Claypool. He has gotten a lot of people's attention, the second-round pick out of Notre Dame. Big kid, 6'4", 238, he can go. Their defense leads the league in sacks. It's right up there. They create some havoc with Bud Dupree on the one side and, obviously, T.J. Watt on the other side. I think Pittsburgh, in my opinion right now, is the better team, but not by a lot.
That is our MVP, our all-pro Rich Gannon. He is with CBS Sports. He is on the call for Buffalo against the New York Jets. Rich, always good talking football with you. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Thanks, Carrington. Talk to you soon, brother.
Rich made a really good point about the screen game for the Kansas City Chiefs. One thing I think that their offense does better than every other team in the NFL is they do really elaborate screens, and they're really creative, and they really emphasize misdirection and sort of getting you out of position and then striking. Bell, that's perfect for him, especially with his patience, the kind of runner that he is, and his ability to get out in space and make big plays. That's probably where I'm most excited to see how they implement Bell into the passing game, into the screen game, and now with no Sammy Watkins, how can you get creative and maybe have Le'Veon kind of fill some of that void that you had with no Sammy Watkins?
He really is patient. When's the last time the Chiefs had a running back like that in Kansas City? It feels like it's been a lot of hit the hole guys to get as many as you can, run downhill, and they'll move on to the next down. I guess back to like a guy like Priest Holmes, where you let the hole develop. Le'Veon Bell's got a really weird, I know we, as Chiefs fans, we've seen him a couple of times, and Pittsburgh always seems to be on national TV, so most people have seen quite a bit of Le'Veon Bell. He's got a very unique running style, kind of a stutter step. Like you mentioned, he's very patient. He waits for the hole to develop, and it's an opposite style of Edwards-Helaire. That's a nice thing. It's not like you got two running backs to do the same thing. Those guys bring completely different skill sets to the table, so I think that at times you're going to see them both on the field. At times you're probably going to see Edwards-Helaire as the running back, and you're going to see a guy like Le'Veon Bell lined up in the slot. Like, you can use him in a lot of different ways.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Denver's been really interesting this year in this way. A lot of the players that we were kind of counting on, and we were spending the offseason kind of talking about the team when I was really high on them, they just haven't got those guys really healthy all together at one time. Drew's battled injury so far this year. Philip Lindsay, he's battled injury so far this year. Royce Freeman, he's battled with injuries so far this year. Jerry Jeudy, I really loved him coming out of college. Noah Fant, like, they just haven't got all of their key guys healthy at one time, where I think this year for the Broncos, you weren't going to win the division, but you were going to get closer to sort of answering some of the questions of where players are in their development and are they going to be sort of pillars for your franchise moving forward. But due to all the injuries that have happened so far, I don't think the Broncos are any closer than they were back in August in answering some of those questions.
I'd say the same thing about their quarterback, Drew Lock, and part of it's because of injury and part of it's because of the injured players that have been around him. It's also, we're talking about such a small sample size here. So Drew Lock's played, what now, seven games, eight games in his NFL career, and he's looked really good, or at least pretty good, in every game except for Kansas City. So I hate to tell Broncos fans and Drew Lock fans listening right now, it's by and large the same defense that he's going to be facing this weekend, maybe even a little bit better. So I think the results are going to be the same. Like, I like Drew Lock. I think he's got a good upside. I wouldn't take him over Justin Herbert in the division or anything like that. It just doesn't feel like he's a good matchup against this defense.
I had an eye on the game they played against the New England Patriots. I didn't really think that the pass catchers for the Broncos really did Drew a lot of favors. Albert O, who basically played the exact same for the Broncos that he played last year for Mizzou, he dropped a couple of touchdown passes. Like, I don't really think the skill position parts around Drew really helped him a lot last week. They just couldn't get the ball in the end zone. I mean, they kicked six field goals last week against the New England Patriots. Like, they just couldn't punch it in for six. And if you can't do that against the Patriots, and you also can't do that against the Chiefs, I just don't know what chance you have at beating Kansas City if you're not turning 3-6.
Yeah, heading into this season, we thought that this wasn't going to be the Broncos with Peyton Manning that won the Super Bowl that had, what do you think, a top five, top three all-time defense. Most of us thought that the defense is going to be pretty good, but it was the offense which was going to light up the scoreboard, because we figured, well, they got Drew Lock and they got Melvin Gordon and they got Jerry Jeudy and they got Noah Fant and they got all these different options, Cortland Sutton. Well, half the guys that I just mentioned are either injured or aren't going to be playing in this particular game. The offensive line's been banged up a little bit also. Their left guard, Dalton Risner, is questionable for this game. So, yeah, I mean, you could talk about the injury bug bites everybody. It really took a chunk out of the Broncos.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we will get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City right here on 610 Sports Radio. I have a very important question to ask you guys. Rob, hit my music. Are we sure that Denver, Colorado is a good place to live? Because I think if we just did a general poll question right now, is Denver a good place to live? I think a majority of the audience, if you remove your dislike for the football team, say, yeah, I've been on vacation in Denver. I got relatives that live in Denver. Denver seems like a really nice place. I've been to Denver. I always go in June for some reason. I always go in May for some reason. Denver's a beautiful place. Can I tell you what the weather forecast is like this week in Denver, Colorado? Today, it is 72 degrees. That's a beautiful day outside. You know what it's going to be on Friday in Denver, Colorado? 39 degrees. You know what it's supposed to be on Sunday during the football game? 24 degrees. I don't want to live in any place where the temperature can drop 50 degrees in 4 days. That's not a place that I want to live. And it's going to snow. Snow is a late in the year kind of thing. We're not at that point now where I would accept that it's going to snow. I'm sure Denver's a great place. I don't know if Denver's a great place to live, though.
Well, then you might want to move. I hate to tell you because I got my.
I think about it almost every day.
I got my weather app pulled up right now. So it's 48 degrees as we speak. You know the highest tomorrow? 82. You know the highest on Friday? 44. By Monday, we're expecting snow. So
it's going to snow on Monday?
Yeah.
No,
here.
It's not.
Monday and Tuesday has snow in the forecast. Yeah.
So
I was waiting for this moment to come up when you found out. I'm excited to see what happens
now. So
just
so you know, I mean.
Come on now. No, y'all lying. Come on now.
They have.
Stop lying to me.
They have all four professional sports
stop
in Denver.
Stop lying to me.
They got legalized weed in Denver. You can ski and you can snowboard in Denver. Pretty good proximity to other cities. Denver's a great place. If weather's your biggest knock on Denver, then.
No, what's.
What?
I just finally, this is the first time I've looked at the weather report in Kansas City in probably 7 months.
Oh. I've been waiting for this moment for like the whole week. I knew he'd melt down
Are
seeing
you guys
the snow.
Serious?
It's supposed to be 82 tomorrow, and then it's going to be 44 degrees on Friday. So if you want to talk smack on Denver because of their weather is way too inconsistent, you do know where you live, right? And have lived your entire life.
Turn the music down.
This is more fun than the Denver conversation. I didn't know you didn't know.
How is this even possible? Now,
upper level low would be my guess.
I don't pride myself in being a weatherman, even though one time I was a weatherman. Like, I'm no Brian Busby. I'm no Joe Lauria here. But I know that it's not supposed to be 82 degrees, and then it says right here, the next day, it's supposed to be 44 degrees. So tomorrow, it's going to be 82. Some of you are going to be wearing shorts outside. You're going to be going back to the pool. That might be the last warm day of 2020. And then 44, 48, 48, 33. It's going to be freezing on Monday. That's what you're telling me.
Freezing
and
snowing. It's
going to be freezing on Monday.
Yeah. There is some weird stuff going on because earlier today, so when we got here, I looked at the weather app and it said 41.
Bro, what's going on, man?
Now it's up to 48. When we sign off coming up in an hour, it's supposed to be 51. And I don't know what time you go to bed, but let's say it's like around 11 o'clock or midnight, it's supposed to be 55. Generally, that's not how it works. So yeah, I don't know what the hell is going on. Something weird's going on here where we got in the 40s earlier this week. The high today was 48. Tomorrow, the high is 82. Friday, the high is 44. The weekend looks okay.
Y'all knew this. I'm being serious. You guys had this information and never shared it with me.
I honestly don't pay any attention to it. I pay no attention to the weather in Kansas City because I'm not calling out Gary Lezak or Gary Amble or Brian Busby or any of our local legends that have told us what they think the weather's going to be. But they've told me wrong so many times over my life. It's kind of like predictions that, I don't know, you make in Survivor League when it comes to the NFL. I stop listening to them. You can only be wrong so many times, and eventually it's my fault for listening. So when it comes to Kansas City weather, just because I just told you that it's going to be 82 tomorrow, it's just as likely going to be 28 tomorrow, to be honest with you.
I'm text line. You guys had this information, and nobody shared it with me.
You have the weather app, dog. It's on every iPhone. You got it.
I also have another question, too. Do you remember on The Shop with LeBron where they asked Pharrell what his skincare routine is? We need to do that same thing with Brian Busby. How is Brian Busby? Think about the first time you saw Brian Busby. I don't know how old you were. Maybe you moved to Kansas City. Maybe you were a lifelong Kansas Cityan. Remember the first time in your life you saw Brian Busby.
We were all the same age. We were six and a half.
He still looks the exact same right now. Like, Brian Busby came to my school when I was in elementary, and I remember one time somebody asked him, do tornadoes start between hot and cold air? And he says, no, because a tornado doesn't start in your kitchen every time you open the freezer. And that just, like, blew my mind. I was like, wow, you're right.
A tornado doesn't happen every time I go into my kitchen.
He looks the exact same as when he came to see me at Bryant Elementary.
Who, Brian Benjamin Button Busby?
He looks the exact same. So I don't know what Brian Busby's skincare routine is.
Exfoliation.
I don't know who his surgeon is. I don't know if he has any surgery.
Oh, no,
but
that's not natural.
I'm here telling you that Brian Busby is the ageless one. None of us know how old Brian Busby is. Brian Busby could be 193 years old, and I wouldn't be surprised. I also wouldn't be surprised if Brian Busby was 51. I have no clue how old Brian Busby Busby is. I don't know anything about Brian. How has Brian Busby been one of the 10 most recognizable people in the city, and none of us know anything about Brian Busby?
I mean, he does have a very wide age range. Like,
I have no clue.
He could be anywhere, in my opinion, from his 40s to his very early 90s.
I'm serious. Right now, if we play your guess age game, I would have absolutely no clue. I'd have no frame of reference on Brian Busby.
Me either. I'm going to throw out a Curtis Jackson. I think he's 50 years old, but okay. I have no idea. I feel like I know I'm only in my 30s, but I've been watching him for at least 50 years.
Brian Busby started. Listen to this. He started in 1978 as a meteorologist
here.
No, in St. Louis.
Okay.
Channel 2 in St. Louis in 1978.
He's been here since probably the 80s.
1978.
I've known him since the 80s. I feel like
it's wild, bro. Absolutely wild.
Got a nice run.
Coming up next, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. It's The Drive.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.